Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated, non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in anytime to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio. Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's episode, we give a recap of this weekend's latest sports happenings, sit down with 2017 All-MIAC linebacker Matt Mitchell, and give a preview of the upcoming Ryder Cup and Tommy football game against Concordia Moorhead.
Everybody, welcome to the show. I'm Brady Halbmeyer. My co-host is Noah Brown and producer TJ Birnbaum. Boys, how are we doing today?
Oh, man, it's a great week. Stressful, but a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah, it's about the same here. Looking forward to talking about the wild world of sports that we're currently living in.
Yeah, what a weekend it was last weekend. Tiger Woods back in the winner's circle. The Browns on Thursday night getting the first win they've had in like 600 some days or something like that.
634.
Since December 24th, 2016.
Yeah, so the Bud Light cages were opened in Cleveland. They had all those fridges or whatever waiting to be, opened.
Can we take a moment and appreciate or not appreciate or just be mad at the fact that the Browns currently have the same record as the Steelers and as the Vikings and have a better record than the New England Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, for the Vikings last week, just you can't. What even happened? Like, the offensive line just completely fell apart. But you couldn't have a better time of the season for it to happen. I was listening to somebody this morning talk about how sometimes this is a really good thing for, like, the Patriots oftentimes lose these early games in the season, and then they kind of learn from it, use it. Bill Belichick uses it as the teaching lesson or whatever, and then it helps them in the long run.
So also, TJ, you and I were talking a while ago about Baker Mayfield, and your prediction was, or you were saying that the Browns shouldn't start Baker Mayfield, but they were most likely going to do that probably around like week 5 or week 6. Like, that was just your prediction. But now, week 3, there he is. I mean, the injury to Tyrod Taylor helped,
but he took the role he had there and as a backup quarterback, got into the game and really lit it up.
Yeah, I like Baker Mayfield. I have since watching him in preseason, but it is important to remember that Sam Darnold also lit up his first week in the league and has been kind of crapping himself out of these games these past couple weeks. So don't put the predictions on Baker quite yet, but I did like the fact that the Browns were willing to sit him and kind of go with Tyrod until obviously the injury kind of moved their plan up a bit.
Yeah, and Baker stepping in, and look at the other rookie quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, just lighting up the scoreboard week after week. Can they keep this up, though? I mean, this is kind of a classic Chiefs regular season here.
People get caught up in like, oh, will they keep it up? Will they be able to do this? Will they fall? Like, just enjoy the ride, man. I mean, Patrick Mahomes has been lighting it up. 13 touchdowns in the first 3 weeks. That's the most in NFL history. It's fun to watch. The Chiefs really have a really, really fun offense. Just enjoy it. And if they start sucking, that's okay. If they win their Super Bowl, that'd be awesome too.
But I think with the Chiefs offense, they kind of are in the same scenario right now as the Vikings defense was last year, is that until someone is able to figure them out, they're going to keep putting up these numbers. Once someone figures them out, we're going to have to see how the coaching staff adjusts their game plan. The Vikes right now, they're realizing that offenses have figured out how to take advantage of the aggressive defense, and we're going to have to see how they game plan to figure that out. Chiefs right now, they're looking hot.
Speaking of hot teams, the Tommies rolling 3-0 going up to Concordia Moorhead this weekend. Their offense has scored fewer and fewer points every week. Not that that's a big issue. They still beat Wisconsin-Eau Claire 49-0.
Right.
So it's not like offense is an issue. But, you know, 2 years ago, the Concordia game is always a really big one. And 2 years ago, it was huge. Two-point walk-off win with 2 seconds left to go. And then last year was 21-0. So probably one of the closest games the Tommies had last season, aside from St. John's. But it'll be interesting to see how well this offense keeps moving the ball, because Concordia historically has had a pretty good defense.
Yeah, I mean, there really hasn't been a team that the Tommies have played yet that has really tested them. I mean, most of these teams they're going against, our scout team is better than. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter is our scout team is oftentimes better than the first couple teams we play. This will be their first real test. 2 years ago in Concordia or in Moorhead, they had a pretty big fan turnout. The students, I was looking over some of the highlights the other day, and there was a lot of students there. They were loud. They were into the game, and it was a tough atmosphere to play. And you saw it. We almost lost the game, you know?
Well, I was my sister is a student up at Concordia, and I was texting her letting her, because I'm going to go up and cover it for Tommy Media. And she was like, yeah, we got a whole bunch of homecoming stuff going on. I was like, shoot, this is homecoming week for the Cobbers. So you're going to have, you know, the stands packed full of crazy cornheads. What are the...
I don't know what their mascot is, but they're going to be rocking, is right.
Yeah. And 2 years ago, it was pretty much the same thing where it was a raucous atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of an underrated factor in games, particularly in these small college football games. Like, you know, looking back last year, you don't think that Target Field, 37,000 people watching, had an impact on the game?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It had a huge one. And so obviously it won't be to that extent, but just having a full crowd, a loud crowd rooting for the other team, that's going to be tough to overcome.
Can we just mention how bold of a choice it is for Concordia to put their homecoming when St. Thomas is visiting?
Okay, yes, that is bold, but here's why I like it. Because everybody comes out for homecoming. It's like the one game that maybe besides St. Thomas, because St. Thomas is, when we play teams in the MIAC, that's the one game on their schedule is St. Thomas. They're trying to knock off the number three team in the country, the team that hasn't lost a MIAC game in three seasons. That's everyone's circled game. You pair that with homecoming, and I like it because it gives them, I think, the best advantage to win that game.
They've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. If they lose, it'll most likely be a close game. We're like, you know what? We fought, you know, we're like, what, the number three team in the nation right now?
Yep.
We fought tooth and nail with the number three team and almost won. If they win, it's like, look at that. We, on homecoming, in front of all of our fans, came out and had just a massive victory over one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, they extra juice. You get on homecoming or whatever. You get all the alumni back. I like the decision, but I see why some people would say.
Yeah, they stand to gain everything and lose nothing, I think, from the decision to have their homecoming be at the same time as the Tommy football game.
Yeah, so we look forward to that. Should be a really good game up in Moorhead. And now let's get to our linebacker here, Matt Mitchell. A fun interview we have with him. Here we get is Matt Mitchell. We now welcome on the show a Chicago native and the 2017 All-MIAC linebacker, the senior, Matt Mitchell. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
So I mentioned the Chicago native, Matt. Your Bears are leading the NFC North for probably the first time in like two decades or something like that. How do you feel?
Well, it's good to be Kings of the North again.
for a week.
You know, I'm not too high on them yet. I know that we've had a couple easy games here and there. We should have won the first game, too, so we should be 3-0 and serious Kings of the North, but, you know, our offense is still kind of sputtering. Our defense is unbelievable. Khalil Mack's the best player on the planet. And the only thing that I have hope about right now is that the last time the Bears went to the Super Bowl, it was with Rex Grossman as their quarterback. And Mitch Trubisky, I know, is better than Rex Grossman. And he had a good defense, too. So hopefully that's where our little light of hope is.
I think one in two people on this planet are better than Rex Grossman are.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And he made it to the Super Bowl. I think that this team can, so I'm all in.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know about giving them the Kings of the North title yet here after 3 weeks, but I think the Vikings are still real tough.
The Vikings are tough. Their defense is unbelievable. I'm not sold on Kirk Cousins. I'm not sold in their run game. But as long as you got a good defense, you're able to win, especially in the NFC North when it gets cold out. So
yeah, the offensive line has looked trash for the Vikings. Literally lost us the game last week.
It's going to be trash, and Khalil Mack's going to eat them alive.
We'll see. We'll see. Is there somebody in the NFL who you idolized growing up or who you try to model your game after?
Oh, man. First one that comes to mind is Brian Urlacher, being a Chicago native. I mean, obviously, he was a guy who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. They just had a ceremony. He was...
What do you think of his hair?
The hair? I don't know. It's I think he looks good, but it's just kind of... It's way too much of a changeup for me to be able to buy in yet. It looks great, and you know what? He's making some solid money off of it after football, so good for him with all his advertising stuff.
So what parts of Brian Urlacher do you try and bring into your game? Like, is there like one thing you try and do every week, or how do you bring in his game?
I think that the way that I identify most with Brian Urlacher is that he was a huge run-stop guy. And everyone on the team, everyone probably on this campus that pays attention to football knows that I am not that fast. last year, actually, you said in the beginning in the intro that I was all MIAC linebacker. I was actually a defensive end. Because they moved me to D-end last year because they had, number one, there was a more talented guy in Steve Harrell in front of me. Okay. And number two is not the fastest guy in the world. So Brian Urlacher was fast, but I'm not. So where I think that I fit most and I'm do the best at is run stopping and being a downhill linebacker and trying to be physical and impose my will on people. That's what I like to try and do. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you get up and try again.
Did you do you prefer linebacker or defensive end?
I've gotten that question a lot. The proper PR answer to that is that wherever the team needs to and that's true to an extent. But I prefer linebacker. I like being – I felt that defensive end, I was kind of – you're limited. You can only be on one side of the line. You know, the field's already cut in half. They run the other way. There's not many plays that you're going to be a part of. But when you're a linebacker, you're able to flow and you're able to fill – in a way that a defensive end can. I just like to be more involved in the game a little bit.
Yeah. And was there one specific linebacker position that you'd play, or would you move across the line?
No, I've usually played a strong side backer most of my life, just because that is the run stopper, not necessarily the finesse guy, but more the stiffer guy that likes to get downhill. That's where I mostly fit. But I've played all over the board. I played strong safety in high school. I played offensive line when I was in grammar school. So I've been played every position in football as you could play. Oh, played quarterback in Italy on our Italy trip.
Yeah, did you?
One for one, 45 yards.
Nice.
And you got tackled on the 1 yard line. I could have been one for one, 45 yards, 46 yards with a touchdown.
Oh, man.
And my QBR would have been like 142.
Yeah. Well, back to defense. How much do you love playing in Coach K's defense with all the blitzing and everything you guys do?
It is so much fun. Being able to be in a defense with a coach that likes to take risks to the point where he blitzes, I mean, he'll tell you the stat. It's like, I think we're up to like 98.7% of all downs we blitz or something like that. So it's just been an absolute experience and seeing how he completely flipped the script on how defensive is reactive. He completely flipped the script and making offenses react to us. We change how offenses play based on what we do rather than we change what we do based on what they do. And I think that type of thinking is just revolutionary when it comes to defense and being out there with a bunch of other talented guys all flying around, all knowing what you need to do. It's been awesome.
Yeah, and so you say that like 98% of the plays you're running are blitzes. Now, blitz, are we counting that as like, you know, you got your four main rushers and then someone else coming off the edge? Or are we talking like full out, you know, 7-8 men to the ball?
Well, we have 4-man stuff, we have 5-man stuff, we have 6-man stuff, we have 7-man stuff, and we have just 7. Well, I think at most we'll bring 7. There might be an 8 somewhere around there, but at this point I think we only have 7. But it ranges from all the way up, all the way down, and we do everything and anything with different combinations and read blitzes, zone blitzes, man blitzes, and it's just Coach K is not like sitting back and waiting for things to come to him. He likes to take them, and that's how he plays and coaches.
Is there one blitz play that you run where, like, when you hear it called, like, you know that you're going to be one of the main guys who might get a chance to make a big play?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, with every blitz that we have, there's a combination of probably three guys that are able to, three guys that it's designed for. But on top of that, like, everyone, just because of the pressure, it could end up being in somebody else's lap. So there's definitely a couple, especially with the strong side blitzes that we call, that I'm thinking that I'm going to come free until I don't. And that's how they tell us to run our blitzes, is you need to expect to come free. And if you don't, you know, hopefully somebody else is.
Do you think the fact that Coach K wears gloves on the sideline, is that an intimidation factor? Because I think it is. I think it's such a badass coach thing to do, to wear gloves.
Coach K's gloves, I've been here 4 years now. And I still don't know why he wears them. And
he's got a hold on.
I think
sheet.
It's just he's holding on a sheet. He catches balls pregame.
Yep.
And I feel like that gets him. It's like when he's not able to slip on the helmet. So I feel like when he slips on his gloves, he's just ready to play. And you know what? For me, I don't have the greatest eyes on the planet. It's good to have a different colored hand when I'm trying to see the signals.
Yeah.
So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. But to be honest, he looks awesome. And he just, it feels like when he slips on those gloves, he's just ready to go.
Yeah, we want to get him on the show at some point. He has to come back on when he comes
on. That would be a wild show.
You think he would do it?
He has, I know he has done podcasts. He has done defensive football podcasts that I've listened to. I'm sure if you approached him, he would think about it.
Good. Yeah, we will.
So we talked about it last week. We had Fritz Waldvogel come in as our guest. And it seems like every season, St. Thomas really only plays two or three highly competitive games until you get to maybe week three, week four of the postseason. Does that lack of competition, do you think, hurt the team going into those intense games like last year against Mary Hardin Baylor?
So, in that, I mean, that with the MIAC right now, it is that some teams are just not holding up their end of the deal. You know, they're not, and that's just the way it is. We've been on a absolutely upward going thing here in this program, and we're not stopping. And it's just some teams aren't catching up. And so when we play those games, it's good because we're able to get in a rhythm. Like this week, we've had three games now that weren't as competitive as we thought they may be. Mm-hmm. And that may be because they weren't as good as we thought we were going to. We played better than we thought we were going to play, which isn't the case. But so when we walk into a game this week like Concordia, there is a little bit of doubt there that's thinking that like we haven't played anybody big yet. But at the same time, that's a good thing because we know that this is not going to be a given thing, and this is, we need to go out there and we need to play our best to be able to beat this team. But sometimes, you know, it is hard to get up. It's part of the mental toughness of this team is like when you know that you might not get a great game this week, you still need to go in there and get your work done. Mm-hmm. And that's I think that's both very beneficial for us, but at the same time, you know, you want to be in fun games. You want to be in close games. But at the end of the day, when we went to Mary Hardin Baylor, we were ready to play them. It wasn't due to the fact that we didn't play anybody in those first two rounds that we lost. It was just they were a good team, and it was two good teams that played, and they won.
What do you think about trying to get some Division II teams scheduled in the non-conference?
I'm up for it. It's just that I think that we would love to do it. Yeah. I don't even know. Obviously, I'm not in the front office making deals and making schedules, but when you think about it from a Division II standpoint or like a Division I AA standpoint, teams that maybe we can compete with, I mean, it's a lose-lose for them. You know, they come down and play us. They win. It's like, okay, great, you beat a Division III team.
Yeah.
If they lose, it's like you just lost to a Division III team. And they lose. So it's hard to – I would love it. I would love the challenge. I would love to have someone from a higher division come down and play us. But I just don't think that it would be beneficial for them.
I mean, Caruso talked about it a couple. The show never aired, but he'll come back. Caruso talked about how he has so much trouble scheduling these non-conference games, and nobody wants to play them. You end up playing a team like Trinity International this year, the NAIA school, and they were just trash. But who knows? Maybe that's in the future. We can get some D2 games. But,
I would love it. Yeah. I would love it.
Yeah. So through the first 3 weeks, your smallest margin of victory is 49 points against Wisconsin-Eau Claire last week. Do you ever get bored during those blowouts? Like, I mean, most of the time the starters are getting pulled by halftime. And you're sitting there for an hour and a half watching, you know.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're at the point, we have eight starters on our defense or eight seniors on our defense that are starters. And, you know, we want to be out there and playing. This is our last year. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to have more, well, obviously I don't have a choice anymore. It's my last year. But I would like to see St. Thomas play a little bit more competitive games on the front end. Just because, I mean, we want to play. But at the same time, so do the freshmen and sophomore. They need to get game experience and stuff. So it's a lot of give and take. And, you know, we've had our chance to play. It's better to see those guys, let the young bucks get out there and do some work. But, I mean, yeah, you don't really like sitting on the sideline watching. It's a non-competitive game. You like to be in there doing your best to try and help your team win.
Right. And speaking of competitive games, you were there 2 years ago for the Concordia game when it came down to that last two-second touchdown pass to Nick Waldvogel. Where does that rank on most exciting games of your career?
It's got to be top three. And I know Coach Caruso always says, like, if you say top three, it's number three. And I don't know. Because, I mean, Mary Hardin Baylor was up there for me last year. That was an awesome game. The Stag Bowl my freshman year was up there. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. That game, the Concordia game, though, I mean, we almost didn't have, like, enough time to be excited because it happened so quickly. Like, the hook and ladder to put us down, and we were all just like, oh, my God, we might have just lost this to the point where we were all saying, all right, there's still time on the clock, like, keep going. And then they got the penalty to kick off from the 20 rather than the 35, which was huge.
Yep.
And then that drive happened so quickly. I mean, Fenske walked down the field, and then there was one play right before the play to end the game that their linebacker dropped a pick, like a, literally right in his chest. It was running the other way with the ball before he even caught it. And then right after that, Walvogel caught that ball, and we lost it. I mean, the emotions, the roller coaster of emotions, which we try to avoid as a team because you don't want to be like that, but it was insane. Because we were so low to the point that, hey, through everyone's mind on that team, we thought, we're not going to win the conference now. We're not going to go to the playoffs after that hook and ladder. A hook and ladder for 90 yards on like 4th and 13.
Yeah.
Now we're not going to go to the playoffs. Now we're not going to win conference. And that might not have been the case, but that's what flashed to our minds too. Nick making a diving catch on a corner route in the end zone to win a game with 20 seconds left. It was awesome.
Yeah. I was down in that corner of the end zone taking photos for Tommy Media. And so like, luckily just happened to be there. It was, you know, the emotions that were going on. And looking back and saw, you know, Alex Fenske, the quarterback during the play. I mean, you mentioned he just kind of walked down the field. You guys have all of this, you know, you're thinking you may not make the playoffs, may not win the conference. Fenske, cool as ever, just going down the
going
field.
To work.
And it's not like he'd been doing that for 4 years. Like, he was a fifth-year senior who was start. That was his first year starting, right? So, I mean, it's not like he had been doing that for a bunch of years. Like that, you know, he's just cool as can be.
And that was a relatively early game. It wasn't like end of the season stuff. It was middle of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex Fenske was the real deal. And, I mean, when he walked down, and Coach Caruso, too, and Coach Killian was still here, I think, whoever the offensive coordinator was making those plays and just, like, hey, having a script ready to go. It was awesome to see. I mean, we did not deserve to win that game whatsoever. We didn't play well in the front end, the middle, or the end, and we somehow pulled it out. But for everyone still in the midst of everything that was going on in that game, to be able to be ready for that final drive to win was awesome.
Yeah, so obviously having those kinds of wins are fantastic. A win's a win. The emotions are high. But you'd like to avoid having, you know, have to win on a walk-off touchdown. No. Going into this weekend's game, how have you all been preparing to make sure that even if it is a close game, it's still a game that you can win, not easily, but you should win.
With less luck involved.
Right, and you play well. And I was a sophomore that year, so I wasn't as, you know, I didn't know much about Concordia. But now that I'm a senior now, and I mean a lot of the guys on the team that are playing right now are seniors, we know what the Concordia is about. We know they're a big physical team. They're going to give you every punch they have. But the best way that we can walk in there is just we need to get our eyes on film. We need to listen to Coach K because Coach K, he knows what to do. He's played this team 10 years now. He knows the winning formula. And just listening to him, getting our eyes on film, getting out to practice and getting our work and make sure we don't show up there and something hits us right in the mouth like it did like that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to talk quickly about the trip you guys took to Italy this past summer as a team. You know, have you felt a different connection with this team because of that trip?
I do think that there really is just a stronger bond between the junior and senior class, especially.
Mm-hmm.
This year we don't have a lot of seniors. I think it's only like 17, and so one of the most important parts of this team dynamic is to have the junior class step up and realize you don't have to be a senior to be a leader on this team. And I think that Italy trip gave us a good opportunity to really connect with those guys on a higher level and just let them realize that, you know, we need them to be on this team. And then on top of that, we bonded. We saw the world together. We did everything together. Rode on buses, planes, trains. You can't be with people, a group of people for that long and not bond with them. You make friends with guys that you didn't think that you would be friends with. And that just all adds to just having a better team dynamic.
It was like a 2-week trip, wasn't it?
It was May 24th to June 3rd, so yeah, 2 weeks, like 13 days or 14 days or something.
And you guys did play a game here, and I was looking through your Instagram, and I found this, your caption here on the video is pregame Italy style. I'm going to play this for you here. So are you the official hype guy for this team?
I've been doing it for the past 2 years. I've been the guy in the middle of the circle.
Love it.
I've been doing that same one. Last year, we kind of, because our freshman and sophomore year, we had one that we'd been doing that was kind of like a legacy rep. There was a lot of guys that did it before that. And then last year someone said, let's change it up. And I said that I saw that video. Mm-hmm. U of I, University of Illinois football did that, and I loved it. And I thought mm-hmm. it was awesome. And I was like, hey, why don't we do this? And then we got to the first scrimmage in fall camp, and they were looking for someone to do it. And yep. someone, and Jock was just like, hey, Matt, go do your that thing. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then from there, it's kind of just took off.
Okay, so I got an idea for you here. If you guys make it to like the national championship or something, you need a special hype video. Mm-hmm. Here you go, Drew Brees, 2009 Super Bowl. Here it is. So highly complicated, but if you can learn the lyrics, it's like 1-2 win for you, 3-4 win some more, 5-6, and it's back and forth with the squad. So you gotta have to teach the team mm-hmm. the chant there, but that's pretty good.
I love that.
And they went on to win this game. They went on to win the Super Bowl. So those are
the magic. The magic words right there.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta win. And there's nothing better. Take it better from Drew Brees, who's killing it right now, too.
Yeah. And you said you've been the hype guy unofficially for the past 2 years or now, and you've had a lot of big games in the past 2 years. I mean, you look back, Mary Harden Baylor last year, Tommy Johnny at Target Field, just kind of being the emotional center, and particularly at Target Field, you know, in front of 37,000 people. What was that like?
That was the greatest experience of my life to this point. On top of being a great game and on top of all the people being there, it was just walking out of the dugout into that atmosphere and looking around and seeing red and purple everywhere. My parents and my family, my parents were there and I had like 10 other people there. They were all in the front row on like the triple deck, though. They were all the way up there, but I could see them because they were going insane up top. And, you know, everyone was going crazy. The student section was right behind a field goal. The St. John's student section was huge.
Yeah.
And it was just the again, another game where you expected an emotional roller coaster, but at the same time, it was very steady. Mm-hmm. Like we played relatively well. I mean, they had a couple big plays, but it was just an awesome game in the sense of the atmosphere, all the other thing, all the other intangibles of a game that you can't really have unless you set it up like that. And it was unbelievable.
Right. And so your class hasn't lost to St. John's in your entire career. You played 4 times, 3 times in the regular season, once in the postseason, 4-0.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It's been quite an experience being able to go and play the Johnnies and have this be a huge rivalry and all this stuff. And the biggest thing that I'm scared of is that we don't know losing the Johnnies. You know, the guys that came before us, like the mm-hmm. couple of you classing for us, they had lost to the Johnnies. There was a couple of years where they weren't winning as consistently as we have been. So thinking about that game, and I've even thought about it myself, it's like you want to think that, like, we were like, oh, St. John's isn't that good. We beat him 4 times. But it's like St. John's is really good. Mm-hmm. Not that we aren't really good, too. But it's like it's going to be a good game. You can't just walk in there and expect to win, especially in Collegeville, which is a crazy atmosphere. And it's going to take a lot to beat those guys this year, especially late in the schedule. It's a completely different dynamic this year because, you know, late in the schedule there could be injuries. Their teams are more developed. Everyone's mm-hmm. got their schemes down a little bit more. There's more stuff on film. So it's not necessarily going to be – I feel like when we play them early in the year, it's not necessarily clean games. We're still trying to figure stuff out. As mm-hmm. we get into – I think we play them October 13th, which yep. is week 6 or something like that.
Like 7. Week 7 since you had the bye or something
like
that.
Yeah, week 7.
Yeah.
So it's just a completely different dynamic based on teams having their stuff down or not.
Yeah.
So I think it would be a cleaner, better game.
Yeah, and you guys will, I imagine, be the first class if you can take care of business on the 13th of October and go 5-0. I imagine you guys will be the first class ever sweep St. John's from freshman year to senior year, but I don't know for sure.
It could be possible. I'm not going to fact check that, but you know, and I know that there hasn't been many people that have been able to do that. It's been a really good rivalry with a lot of blows going back and forth, but at this point, I mean, we got a strong hold of it, but we need to be able to finish it up.
So just one more question, then we've got a producer question that TJ asks. So you mentioned you've the past couple of years, this team's gotten really close together, particularly the juniors and seniors. You've made the playoffs the past couple of times, and back in 2015 made the national championship. Is this year's squad capable of going all the way?
I 100% believe that we are capable, and we have been the past 4 years. When we made it, when we lost in the quarterfinals the past 2 years, The talent has been there. The coaching is there, and it's gotten better, I think. Mm-hmm. And as long as it keeps on progressing at the trajectory that we're going, I think that we absolutely can. We need to play a lot better, mm-hmm. Everyone. And as long as we have, I mean, coaches talk about it all the time, our effort and attitude, as long as we give it our best and we are positive and we're always working, looking for work out there, just trying to maintain the game, not be on that emotional roller coaster, that's half the battle. As long as you're able to control all that stuff, that's absolutely half the battle. And then playing well and doing the things and finishing on top of that is just a whole other side of it. And I think that this team has that trait in them, mm-hmm. in us. And it doesn't necessarily come down to talent as we get deep into the playoffs and stuff, but we have the coaching, we have the players, and we have the, I mean, it's a bunch of good guys in this team. We all love each other, and we're all trying to go towards the same goal, so I think that we absolutely could.
All right, yeah, so we end each show or each interview with a question from our producer that we ask. It's the same question every week. We can keep a running tally of who answers what. So, TJ?
Yeah, so are you familiar with the, what year was it, 2013?
2014.
2014 NFC Divisional playoff game between the Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers, in which there was a very infamous no catch called by the refs.
Dez?
Dez Bryant. So our question, we've had two answers so far, is did Dez catch it?
Did Dez catch the ball? I got to see it.
Here's the video. Yeah, we got it playing for you. Oh, shit. I went too far.
As a Cowboys fan, I firmly believe that Dez caught it.
And as someone who hates the Packers, I also firmly believe that Dez caught it.
Where do you stand on this, Brady?
I think he caught it. I mean, the ground forced the fumble, so it's a catch.
With all these different things with the rules and stuff, like the roughing the passer in the NFL right now and all these rules about catching, and it's just, at the end of the day, he landed in the end zone. He rolled into the end zone. It looked like not by contact or on the 1 yard line, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, because he makes the catch,
pops out,
comes down, gets 2 feet going, starts lunging toward the end zone, and then the ground pops the ball out.
Yeah,
I don't know. That one's a little close. That one, I mean, he
so
reached. I think he did not catch it. After watching that video, he reached. It didn't really make that much of a football move. He's just falling. Mm. And it knocked his forearm, hit the ground, and the ball came out. That's not a catch.
All right.
So
thank you,
I
official.
Think officially, I think it's 1-1.
It's 1-1.
Yeah. Fritz said it was a catch.
Fritz said he caught it. Well, yeah. Of course, he's a receiver. Of course, he said he caught it.
Well, thank you for joining us, Matt. We wish you the best of luck this weekend. We're looking forward to watching the rest of the season.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you. Yeah, and that was linebacker Matt Mitchell. Looking forward now here. We talked about it a little bit in the first segment, but this Concordia football game, that's going to be good.
Yeah, it should be a really good game. Concordia is probably the second best team the MIAC will face this season. Mm-hmm. They didn't quite make it in the top 25 this week. I think they were like 26th or something, or 27th in the voting. At least in one of the polls I saw. So, they're a top 30 team.
Yeah. Tommy Media uses the D3 football poll. Mm-hmm. And so Concordia Moorhead received 3 votes to be in the rankings. They were unranked.
Okay.
It looks like they've got quite a few teams ahead of them, but they at least received national votes. So they're receiving national attention.
Okay. I mean, they did play one ranked team so far this season, Whitewater, who is, I think, 9th or something like that.
According to D3, they're number 10.
Number 10 in the D3 rankings. And they lost 24-6 that game, which was on the road at Whitewater.
Right.
But other than that, they've taken care of business against Augsburg and Hamlin. Yeah.
And in a league of blowouts, and maybe that's just coming from a St. Thomas perspective, mm-hmm. Where we're going in blowing out almost every team we play, having Concordia play against Wisconsin-Whitewater that closely, 24-6, I mean, yeah, that's what, still a 3-possession game. But still, I mean, they held their own against one of the best teams in the nation.
Yeah, and early on in the season, too, it was on the road, so... you know, a couple things that could, you know, who knows? Maybe they didn't play their best game. Maybe Whitewater didn't play their best game. So we'll just have to see Saturday.
Right. And Concordia, as you said, they did what they needed to do as well in the other games. You know, they win the easy games that they should fairly handedly. Their smallest margin of victory in those three games was 25 points. They beat Nebraska Wesleyan 28-3. And then if you look, the other two games they have here, they scored 54 and 55 points against Augsburg and Hamlin. So,
yeah, and 2 years ago when we played there, Brandon Zylstra was on the squad, the Vikings receiver now. So who knows? Maybe they got another Vikings receiver in the future at Moorhead there. But it should be a fun game. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a good test for Coach K's defense and in the offense here.
Yeah, and really, if you look at this Concordia team, they're really well balanced. Just looking at the individual statistical leaders in the MIAC, you know, their quarterback is fifth in touchdown passes. Yeah. Their running back is fourth in both rushing yards per game and touchdowns, with four touchdowns on the season. They've got two of the league's sack leaders with 4.5 and 3 sacks. And I think looking at this St. Thomas team, you really can't find any weak spots when going up against MIAC teams. But I think historically over the past two or three seasons, the place that they've needed to work most is the offensive line. And so that's probably going to be the key battle on Saturday is the St. Thomas offensive line versus the Concordia defensive line.
Yeah, that's been, I think, the biggest struggle for St. Thomas this year has been the offensive line. So that'll be fun to watch. Hopefully they can, you know, go up there and play really well. Mm-hmm. Be a good step forward for this team.
Yeah, and I think if you look back at last season too, in the playoff loss, was that
Mary Harden Baylor.
Yeah. Our defense was playing fantastically, and it's right. The same story again here this season. And really, the offense just couldn't get anything going. The run game was getting stuffed. I think Jeremy Molina, the fullback, was the leading rusher with 60 some yards. They were hard fought yards, but passing game, nobody could get open, and I think a lot of it started with the offensive line.
Yeah,
it was a group effort, and they played admirably, but the whole offense was just shut down. So I really think if you look at this year's team as opposed to last year's team, Caruso is really trying to maximize his playmakers that he has on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and it all starts with the offensive line. If you can't protect the quarterback, then you're not going to be able to get the ball out of his hands to a playmaker. So they got to get better on that. That's been the Achilles heel these last few years, as you mentioned. So if they want to get over the top, get to the top of this league and win a championship, the offensive line is going to need to step up.
Well, that's all we've got for you this week here on Keep the Ball Rolling with Brady Halbmeier and TJ Birnbaum. I'm Noah Brown. Special thanks to our guest, Matt Mitchell, linebacker for the Tommies. We'll see you next week.